Good morning. Welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I'm Chris Jimerson, your lay leader this morning. It is terrific to see so many of you are able to be here today because you didn't want to miss hearing me lay lead. To our guests, that was a little joke. Today is actually a big day for us here at the church. More on that in a moment. But first, we want to welcome our guests today. We're an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome everyone to our church. It is my great pleasure to introduce our settled minister candidate, Reverend Meg Barnhouse. Meg grew up in North Carolina and Philadelphia. After graduating from Duke University and Princeton Theological Seminary, she spent a chapter of her life in Spartanburg, South Carolina, working first as a college chaplain teaching public speaking, human sexuality, and world religions. She says she tried hard not to get them mixed up. Earning her credentials as a pastoral counselor, she ran her own counseling practice while raising her two sons, who are now in their 20s. She was active in the community, preaching and teaching in many churches, recording commentaries for North Carolina Public Radio and Weekend All Things Considered, and serving as interim minister in several congregations, as well as helping to found the Safe Homes Network for battered women. Along the way, she earned a second-degree black belt in American karate. She finished up that Southern chapter with 7 years as the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Spartanburg. She has just completed a 2-year interim ministry at the UU Congregation of Princeton. She has been unanimously endorsed by our church's Settled Minister Search Committee to be the next settled minister at this church, and shortly after this service, we will reconvene to hold that vote. I am honored and privileged to introduce Reverend Meg Barnhouse and her partner, Kaya Hartwood. Please join me in affirming our mission statement printed in your order of service and on our wall. We gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice. Our reading for meditation and candle lighting today is from Maya Angelou. Lift up your eyes upon the day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. Women, children, men, take it into the palms of your hands. Mold it into the shape of your most private need. Sculpt it into the image of your most public self. Lift up your hearts. Each new hour holds new chances for new beginnings.
Let us just breathe together for a moment as we look at the candles that are lit. As we keep in mind all the joys and the sorrows the flames represent, and we keep in mind that there are so many others unmarked that are within our hearts and minds. Let us open our hearts to one another, surrounding one another with holy light and sacred dark. The reading I'm going to start with is called Unicorn. It's a story that I wrote that's coming out in my new book, so it's not in a book yet. I saw a unicorn coming down the road at me on I-85. That's what it looked like at first glance anyway. Don't get me wrong, I'm a sensible person. I know there aren't such things in the world. But there it was, this enormous gray ridged horn coming fast toward me southbound, and it was angled forward and up as if it were pointing to the Blue Ridge Mountains and then beyond that to the sky. As it blew by me, I saw that it was a church steeple on a flatbed truck being shipped to its new building. The odd sight stuck with me, and I started thinking about those church people. I wondered how much the steeple cost, and I thought about the things it symbolized to those people, and I thought it probably symbolized their church pointing to God. And I knew that they knew, and like we all know in one way or another, that God is not literally up there. And I thought maybe there could be another symbol for Unitarian Universalists who think of God, some of us, as everywhere, and some of us just don't think of God, and that's just the beginning of all our various thoughts on the nature and character of the One. And I asked myself, what would be a better symbol of pointing to God, and what direction or directions would it point? And I thought maybe it would look like one of those Moravian Christmas stars with almost as many points as a chrysanthemum. I wonder why people wanted to build one more church when there already are so many. Sometimes the reason is a growing population of people who need you and no church of your kind is near them, so you build one. And sometimes the reason is a split in an existing church and one unhappy, hurt, and angry group is making a new church where they can become the community they wanted to be. All it takes, someone once told me, she kind of did it like this. All it takes is a grievance and a coffee pot. And I thought about how much hope it takes to build a church. This time, they might be thinking, this time we'll get it right. We will be good people and we will really point folks toward God, and there won't be politics or infighting or cliques, and we won't ever disappoint each other, and we won't do things in a slapdash manner, and this finally will be the church we've all been dreaming about, and we won't fight about silly things like carpet or moving the piano or the banners, and we'll be kind and respectful of one another, challenging one another lovingly, cleaning up our own hearts before we start trying to clean up other people's hearts, and it will be like it's supposed to be. And I thought about how, from my perspective, a church like the one they may be hoping for is as mythic and elusive a creature as a unicorn. Churches cause lots of joy, but they also cause pain as they strive to improve people, as they strive to instruct people on the correct way of being a person in the world. Some churches say, don't ever drink, but you may wear makeup and jewelry. And others say, absolutely no vanity, but you may drink beer as it is God's gift to human beings. Those are the German Lutherans. Some churches talk lots about hell, and others don't mention it, even though you couldn't get up in their pulpit and say there isn't any hell. Hell is there undergirding everything. People try to be kind, but often when we feel passionately about something, it is hard to keep in mind that the other people are more important than correctness of behavior or purity of doctrine. A conviction that the loving God they worship will punish mistakes with eternal hellfire can make some people feel an urgency that can come across as meanness. Some churches are kind but ineffectual, and some are kind and powerful, and they do lots of good, and they function in marvelous ways. Churches are like families. Present are the relatives who drive you nuts, the misunderstandings that hurt, and all the destructive behavior that families can have. And at church, you also get the warmth, the growth, the shared history, support, and love you can find in a family. People act like people no matter where we are. We know we're supposed to be kind and loving and not jump down each other's throats for not getting the right kind of free trade coffee. And we know we're not supposed to fight bitterly about the best ways to work for peace. I heard a poem on NPR the other day, part of which was a prayer. God, make the bad people good and the good people nice. Honey, we're trying. I chose that reading for this morning because I want to talk about church this morning. Last Sunday, I talked about myself as a minister. I told you why I wear this teacher's robe instead of priestly garments. I talked about my strong family tradition of professional ministry and or church addiction. I believe it's good to get oriented before you take an exploration with someone, and so I wanted to imagine myself, as I said last Sunday, in the pew, and there's this stranger up there who may become my settled minister, and what do I want to know about her? And I thought I'd want to know how she thinks of herself as a minister. And so I talked to you about those things. I talked to you about how I like leading in a collaborative way and how I like thinking together with people about the joys and challenges of congregational life and putting my energies and experience and training into helping a congregation become the congregation it wants to be. And then I asked myself if I were sitting in the pews and it were the second Sunday, and I had already heard some of how the person thinks about being a minister, I'd want to hear about how they think about church. And so I want to tell you that this Sunday. And since we're Unitarian Universalists, mostly here in this room, I thought we'd be most interested in the Unitarian Universalist Church, so I wanted to get us oriented in this way and talk some about where we've been and where we are now, where we might be going. So, to that end, I'm going to tell you briefly where the Unitarians and Universalists have been. And if you know this stuff already, just trust that it'll be over soon. And if you don't know, if there's something that interests you and I do become your settled minister, we'll talk more about it as we go. Our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors are the liberal Christians of the early church, and then again in the Reformation, the early liberal Christians and heretics of the Reformation, which was in the mid-1500s. Unitarians and Universalists were both Christian denominations until the 1800s. The Unitarians started having other stuff mixed in with their liberal Christianity. In New England, there was a group called the Transcendentalists. They had just been reading the recent translations of the Hindu and Buddhist scriptures, and everyone was just on fire with this new knowledge. And the Transcendentalists, who were active Unitarians, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Margaret Fuller, the Alcott family, Louisa May and her daddy. They all loved the Eastern religions and they loved nature. And so Transcendentalism saw God in everything. And so really everything was to be worshipped. And they wanted to still be a part of Unitarianism, and Unitarianism didn't really want them because they were weird. The Unitarian leadership was faced with the question of, do we accept these people or do we write a creed finally that we've been resisting writing for years? Do we write a creed and keep them out? And to their credit, they decided not to write a creed and make their circle wider so the Transcendentalists could be in there. So for the last 170 years or so, I'm having a moment of silence for those of you who are checking my math. You know who you are. Unitarianism has been a mixture of Christianity and Eastern thought. Then, in the 30s, the humanist movement happened. Well, the humanist movement was a response to, a collaboration with, the biblical scholars of the 20s and 30s who began studying the actual scriptures and finding in them mistakes and finding in them the evidence that they were written by many different people and cobbled together by editors. And this knowledge began seeping out, and part of the response to that was the Fundamentalist Movement. And the Fundamentalist Movement is named after the five fundamentals. That's another sermon. But one of the five fundamentals is the inerrancy of Scripture, or the no mistakesness of Scripture. So the humanists seized upon this new knowledge with joy and saw a vision of a future where religious wars would cease and where faith-based limitations on scientific endeavor would be lifted. and where we wouldn't have any of this, the Yiddish word is mishigas, the nonsense and tangling, detailed obstruction between science and religion. And humanism has tremendous appeal to Unitarians. And so here we have the Unitarians, who are a mixture now of Puritan Christianity overlaid with transcendental tree-hugging kind of paganish stuff, overlaid with humanism. And in 1961, they merged with the Universalists, who were a Trinitarian, Jesus-worshipping denomination, whose main thrust was that God is too good to send anybody to hell. And the old joke is that the Unitarians agreed because they thought they were too good to be sent to hell. And so they merged. And so where we are now as a denomination is we are Unitarian Universalists. So the Universalist strengths of community, spiritual inclusiveness, and love have become a balance for the Unitarian strengths of reason and rationality and individuality and democratic process. And so that's where we came from as Unitarian Universalists, and we, I think, are called to honor our ancestors and try to stay in touch with where we came from. And so where are we now as Unitarian Universalists? Well, across the continent and in every pew and chair of a Unitarian Universalist congregation, we have Christians, Jews, pagans, Buddhists, people who do Buddhist meditation along with Christian ethics, or people who embrace their Jewish heritage but love the transcendentalist thought that God is in everything. We have spiritual humanists. We have regular humanists. We have humanists who are uncomfortable with the word spiritual. We have astronomy professors sitting next to astrology teachers, and we're all in the sanctuary or room together, depending on which congregation you're part of. We're all together. And why are we together? Because we're Unitarian Universalists. And UUism, as we say for short, has room for all of those people. And you don't even have to say, I'm a humanist UU, I'm a Buddhist UU, I'm a Jewish UU, I'm a Christian UU. It's okay, because we're all Unitarian Universalists. And you can be any one of those or any combination among those and call yourself a Unitarian Universalist, because you are standing in the very merry middle of the stream of Unitarian Universalist tradition. We're together in this. We have immense common ground. And so we worship the God of our understanding, or we worship the Spirit of life, Spirit of love, Spirit of truth, or we worship that amazing connection that can happen between and among human beings when they're focused on the same task, or when they're singing together and trying to be one voice, or where they're drumming together, or where they're just sitting and having a conversation over coffee. We worship the transformation of life and the nourishment of souls that can happen when people of goodwill and lively mind come together and call themselves a church, even if they don't agree on some things. So our common ground is that we all want transformation. We are hungry souls who want to be fed, and we see hungry souls all around us, and we want to create a space where they can be fed. We see the world staggering under the weight of unjust systems, and we want to make that right. We want to make justice roll down like waters. And yet, it's easier to work for justice out there than it is even to work for justice inside our own living room and congregation. We say we want peace and justice for everyone, and we do. But once you start saying, I want peace and justice for everyone, beginning in my own house and congregation, Woo, you start to see that peace and justice sometimes are kind of mutually exclusive. Which one are we going to do? In which proportion? The lovely challenge. We do it together. We are caught up in the glory of thinking that we can make some of these things happen. We want to be the church where gifts are given. Gifts of courage, attention, affection, challenge, surprise, experience, strength, and hope. That is who we are now. We are the people who tell their children the stories of Jacob and Rebecca, Abraham and Isaac, and Rachel and Deborah. And we also help the children paint the face of Krishna a beautiful blue and talk about him playing the flute and dancing with the cowherd girls. We are the people who come together because we're stronger together. Because one of us could teach our children that reason is a treasure and that you shouldn't believe in something that injures your spirit. But with all of us teaching our children that, we have a place where that idea becomes strong. And one of us could proclaim that it was wrong to believe in a God that doesn't believe in you. But if we all proclaim that together, then we have a message that people will hear. And that message will cause many people to heal. We come together because many minds together are often more wise and definitely more creative than one by itself. Our congregations have the power to send people out with good news and a healing hand. You wonder what our good news is? Well, I think it starts with, there is no hell. I was taught by loving people that that you believed a certain thing and behaved a certain way, and that God loved you in spite of how you actually believed and behaved. And I know that there are many people who were raised with the rough kind of Christianity that I was not raised with, that says, if you're born to this earth, you're going to hell unless you're born again. And so if we, religious liberals, can go to our hair appointment or our golf game or work and say, I go to the One God, No Hell church. I guarantee you'll start a conversation. So, for the transformation of the world, we sit on committees. For the transformation of the world, we clean and we teach and we sit on the board and we write checks and we deal with people who are lovely and we deal with people who are never pleased. We deal with one another over what programs we can afford, and we talk about money until some people say, oh, you talk about money all the time. Money is magic and it can turn into anything you want. And so we have to talk about it. It's a very spiritual topic. We come together to make the world a better place, to make our kids strong, amongst all the hellfire talk they get at school. We do the small work and we do the large work. We wash dishes and we serve as president on the board. And we really don't actually know which is the bigger work, more important. It's all service. It's all ministry. And that's what we're called to do. We're called to be the heart and the hands of the divine, and we're called to do it together and encourage one another in it. So somewhere between the biggest work and the smallest work is the beloved community, where we hold one another in love, and we go through changes in life, and we visit the sick, and we light candles, and we're here to go into the future. And where are we going in the future? Well, I know where you're going because you decided. You're going to gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice. And we keep asking ourselves the question, what would it take to heal everyone? May we go forth from this place with peace, with clarity, with love and joy. May we take any blessing we have found here and take it into the world, which needs a blessing from us. Bright morning stars are rising. Bright morning stars are rising. Bright morning stars arising. Day is a-breaking in my soul.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.